You're listening to Conversion Cast, presented by Leadferno. I'm your host, Aaron Wyke. Conversion Cast focuses on digital marketing and conversion, exploring the art and science to turn a lurker on your website to a lead, a browser to a buyer. Today, we talk consumer search behavior in local SEO, discussing some fascinating research on Google local search results, reviews, and conversion. My guest is Mike Blumenthal, co-founder of Neared Media and widely considered the godfather of local search. His unmatched time, research, experience in publishing in local SEO is pretty much unmatched. I learn from Mike in every conversation I have with him. So let's get started with today's. Mike Blumenthal, thank you so much for joining me on Conversion Cast.
It's always a pleasure to chat, and this is the excuse we have to chat, good as any.
There you go. I probably should have hit and record already in our 20 minutes of catch-up before we got going, because there were already some great things being summarized and shared. So let's start off with those. Number one, I usually at the end of my podcast will tell people where to follow the person or ask them where they can be followed. I can just easily flat out say, the Neared Media podcast is one of three that I religiously take in every episode. Yourself, David Mim, and Greg Sterling do such a great job capturing that. Subscribing to your guys' email newsletter, I think, is definitely a must for anyone interested in any slight percentage of local and search and commerce and all of those things. But the reason having you on today is, you, as you summarize this when we were talking before hitting record, is you guys have been doing some consumer search behavior. And the comment that hit me is, you said it basically shattered all your preconceived notions about how consumers interact with local search results. So let's start by sharing that research that you've done and start to dive in and pick apart some of those things with that search behavior and how it relates to conversion.
Sure. So over the past year, David, Mim, Greg, and I have been refining a process for doing consumer search behavior on Google. So we will put together a panel of real U.S. consumers or European consumers, if that's the requirement, and give them a problem of some sort. You're celebrating Friday night for some victory at work. You're looking for a place to take a group of friends. Go to Google and solve your problem. Or you're having work-related issues at work and you think you need to go hire a lawyer, go to Google and figure that out, right? So we give them a fairly broad problem, and then we videotape their interactions and categorize their actual clicks and then keep track of the anecdotal comments and track all of that. So we're actually looking at real consumer behavior with real search behavior. This is information that only Google has access to, which is why we sort of got into it, because historically, most agencies and marketers are dealing with the results of their changes, right? So a month later, you get to see whether your analytics look better or worse, but you have no idea really what triggered it. So we're trying to look at the beginning of this whole process to understand which things people find important. And so far, we've done four of these in different verticals. And what's been also fascinating is each of these verticals is totally different behavior. And the totally different behavior, and Google relates to it differently. So the ad layouts are different, the pack positions are different, the pack types are different. Everyone's different. And unless you understand what's going on in your vertical, it's going to be very hard to nail it, even with the back-end tracking that Google makes available to us.
Yeah, I think that's a great takeaway right there, is just being familiar with the presentation of the results and the options. Some categories having LSAs, not having LSAs, where the map pack appears, organic results, knowing what's in those organic results. Are they directory sites? Are they, direct to the websites? So, knowing the...
Do the consumers engage with the directory sites, or do they engage with the LSA, or do they not like ads, right? All the things that Google throws in, we think they throw them in because they know, and we've seen behaviors to that effect. An example of that is LSAs. We, in the legal industry, they don't show on every search, right? In fact, some searches, even that are localized, only show organic results. So you get three search types. organic results, maybe with ads, local results with ads and organic, and then local results with LSAs. And so we saw three of those. And what we saw when LSAs were present was just this dramatic change of user behavior, because the LSAs capture so much information. They're Google screens, so they look more authoritative. They're highlighted color-wise. They're not well marked as ads.
They're right at the top of the results.
Right at the top of the results. They include a picture. They include review stars and a rating. They're very compelling to people. And even people who said, I don't look at ads, would go back and click on those. And traffic, which had been split maybe 48 organic to whatever, 38 local, you know, people making choices, would switch to a third when LSAs were present. So Google knows this very well. And it was one of the, they can so control user behavior is the other takeaway, right? If they want to control user behavior, they can. So on high value searches, you can bet your bottom dollar that they are controlling user behavior. I mean, users literally switch from whatever they're doing before, they go back to that LSA ad.
Yeah, I wonder, just as like an aside, was that something they stumbled into, or they already knew these key elements, right? And that's what gave them the perfect recipe that, like, if we do this, 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 and this and position it here, this will capture clicks like nothing else in the search.
Right. That's right. Yes. I have no idea whether, I mean, obviously they test everything they do. And so if they didn't know going in, they learned fairly quickly after that either Google screened or Google Guarantee plus the review stars plus the imagery plus the other stuff was very compelling for consumers. And it's worrisome in the big picture, because in the EU, there's some regulatory effort to make search fairer to all businesses. In the United States, none of that exists. And I fear, as a, you know, long-term local marketer, that essentially local is going to, at least all the service businesses are going to be, it's going to be pay to play. And given that Google, at least in the last 6 months, has not provided much guarantee of quality of local service ads, there's been a lot of fraud and abuses, whether it's lawyers or air duct cleaning, a lot of abuses in that arena. It's that sort of a scary prospect that a business is paying so much for a phone call and it's stealing so much, you know, traffic from local. And I've started to use the word stealing, which I know I never liked before, but it's clear when it moves from a free Google property to a paid Google property that's an intentional shift on Google's part. And it's concerning to me.
Yeah. Well, in reviewing your European research, what really struck me, right, is the changes Google had made there to create a more fair playing field were really just lipstick on a pig, right? They gave some visual elements that at first glance you'd think, oh yeah, that's more fair. They're creating these things. But as your guys' research showed, the way it appears in the search results and displays, it's not getting eyeballs. It's not getting attention. It's not attracting clicks, because it pales in comparison to their own properties that they're still highlighting there. So that really shone out on that.
Then they say, you know, if you saw this last week, then they come out and say, oh, we've made these significant changes, but they're disadvantaging small businesses, you know, and they have made links as the metric of their ability to create a more competitive environment. Really, that's a bogus metric. That's a metric that allows them to pit one company like a hotel against a hotel aggregator. The real metric should be, how much traffic do they send to the open web, right? Is it gone up or is it going down? And the reality is it's going down. And the metric should be that. Then, however that traffic gets sent, it gets sent to the open web, whether it's ads or organic or local. And I think even some amount of reparations are in order. I mean, Google's been doing this behavior for 10 years and have damaged a lot of businesses. And I think that maybe initially that number should even be higher, the traffic to the open web. So
yeah, no, totally makes sense. So let's dive a little bit deeper into that consumer search behavior, because you had some interesting findings in between the elements when we look at different industries and verticals. You know, the one we were talking about earlier, the difference between what draws someone to click within self-storage results, looking for that compared to someone looking for a healthcare professional are vastly different. Share with us some of your guys' learnings across that.
Sure. So the way I sort of visualize this is on a spider graph, which has four points: proximity, price, life impact, and reputation. And any category falls somewhere, so some percentage of each of these comes into play, and that blob that's created in the middle of the spider graph shifts towards one direction or the other. In the case of storage, it was really clear. First and foremost, it was this tie sort of between proximity, right? Is it close and convenient to where I'm living or moving to? And price. They're all the same. I want the lowest price. And so price and proximity became very heavily weighted in their consideration. Users didn't care whether it was an ad, local, organic, where they got that information. Brand had some minor impact, but not much. And then reviews in that context weren't a primary driver of choice. They were an excluder of consideration. So they'd go, they'd make this decision that this is close, they have some good deal, and then they'd look at reviews to parse through the two or three. And if there's a negative one, they would abandon that one and pick one of the other two. So in that situation, reputation was there, but more as an elimination factor rather than a choice. Whereas in physicians, what we saw was people would overtly state, we don't trust ads. They'd go buy the ads. They'd go into the local finder. I never thought people went into the local finder. I thought the local finder was just there. I don't know why it was there, but they would click into the local finder. They would scroll through 20 or so results. They would say regularly, we're looking for the best doctor, the best practice. So reviews, when we say reviews, really what people were looking at was stars and ratings, and they would pick four of the best and then go visit the websites to see if they were of the right tribe. In other words, women would look for women, people of color would look for people of color, and make a choice, you know, from the four best that they picked. Now, interestingly, in physicians, they're very poorly populated. They're erratically populated with reviews and photos. And so those that were on the review game did better significantly. And those that were on the photo game, I think if more photos had been there, would have done better. They're particularly weak in that. But people would then go out to the website. So their reputation was number one, but there was not this life impact decision. People didn't see the choice of a doctor as a life, in these cases, it was primary care and obstetrician. It wasn't life or death. It's not like cancer treatment, right, where you really have to pick the right one. And so it wasn't a life decision, and people felt free to sort of, and then they would go to the website, not only would they look for tribe, they'd look to see if they were taking new patients and what insurance they would take and how easy it was to make an appointment. So those things became key in that environment, and, you know, and that's totally opposite of what was in storage, and restaurants were different, lawyers were different. And so we're seeing a different sort of blob in every vertical so far we've looked at. And who thought, I mean, when you look at the click-through curve in physicians, it's, you know, okay, there's a few more in one, two, and three, but a majority of them occurred beyond three. And a number of them occurred beyond 10 or 15. The click-throughs deep in the pack were significant. And who thought, right? All you got to do is show in the pack in that category and, you know, have a good reputation to be considered. So the consideration pool in that was very deep into the pack. And that was shocking to me.
Yeah, no, in looking at some of the charting you guys had with that, I kind of felt the same. You know, there's the one thing that you would expect, that the number one position drew a lion's share of clicks. But once you got past that, you saw the same amount of clicks that 9, 10, 11, 12 in the finder could have, almost similar to 2 or 3, right? So it wasn't this where exactly I'm of the same ilk where you think that the local pack, the top three, is just a have and have not against the others. Absolutely not. If you can work yourself into that top 10, 15, again, it's likely going to be dependent on where you're located, amount of choices, things like that. But that can cause the searcher to go deeper and deeper into those local finder results. The other thing that I think is really important that you bring up related to conversion, right? You're talking about the conversion of drawing that click for the user, which obviously if they're within Google properties, there's already conversion elements there for them to call, visit your website, Google business messages and start a chat with them. But to me, this also just screams to businesses to understand what are these key three or four factors for conversion that they need, and make sure your website heavily represents those too, because those are the key things. And I think, as we were talking about before, in not knowing the consumer search behavior, then you also, you know, web designers, digital marketers, agencies, they're creating websites that go with the standard tried and true stuff, but they're not placing the importance on here's the top two or three things you really need to hammer home in your content, your design, your layout, so that people can decide to take a next action from that website.
Exactly. I mean, and websites played a significant role. I think, Google converted maybe 50%, but 50% still went to the website, right? So it's a pretty big number. This is across, multiple categories. And you're right. You're absolutely right. They're looking for very specific things that are vertically based. Although there's a similar issue that occurs in the organic search results, where people are use the title tags and the meta description to see if their primary need is being addressed. And what you see frequently in the organic, like in lawyers, is you see the same title tags and meta descriptions, one law organic result after the next, and people say they all look the same, right? Because the lawyers didn't understand what people valued in employment law, the title tags were meant for ranking and not meant for people. And as a result, there was a loss of opportunity. Interestingly, in lawyers, the one lawyer that regularly cheated on review stars and used product review stars in their organic page, they consistently won out because of that. In other words, people are trying to decide which page to go to. The title tags and meta descriptions all look the same. Well, one of them cheated and has review stars. That was the one that got picked more often than not, which I thought was interesting and just shows how people rely on those stars as a proxy.
Yeah. But in this case, that proxy could even be just the differential to the other search results that are there, right? Like when all things are so equal, as you put, right? And that's something that I'm often talking about, even with Leadinferno clients, as I often end up giving a lot of SEO and conversion advice, because we want them to have as much traffic as possible so we can help them convert it, is so many people have fallen into the trap of the on-page elements only being for SEO, and they don't look at those on-page elements for conversion. And, you know, being unique, being different, helping when there's eight choices on the screen in front of you, be the one that someone wants to select is massive. But if you don't approach it that way, just as you put it, it's a huge missed opportunity.
Huge missed opportunity. And we see it. Again, in law, people preferred organic results and preferred local websites to directories, because the directories are mostly shit in that industry. Now, in industries where directories were good, like in storage, they didn't care. Like if you go to Sparefoot, it's a very good directory and allows you to pick and choose, find the lowest price, find the right proximity. It's actually a very good engine. People don't mind that. And in physicians, there was one directory that was really good and one that was terrible. I think ZocDoc was the good one. And the other ones were like, you'd get there and it would just be a shit show. And again, people, if it was easy and a well-done directory, and so it's important to know if the directories in your industry are working, so you can decide whether to be there or not. In classic barnacle SEO play, you know, if the directories aren't working, it doesn't matter whether you're there or not. People are going to abandon them very quickly. If they are working, they may be making a primary decision there. So it's important to understand whether how consumers relate to the directories in that industry.
Yeah. Conversion. How much are you thinking about it? And what are you doing about it? What if there was one solution that could help fortify what you're doing with conversion on your website, that you could just sign up in minutes and start seeing better conversion from your website visitors? Well, good news. That's LeadFerno. We place floating call to actions on all the pages of your website. They can market your reviews and reputation or your average reply time. And it gives your customer and consumer additional channels like texting, requesting a return call, filling out a contact form, scheduling through your Calendly link or other booking service, all in one place. So they can select how to take a next step with you, making it easy to convert with you and easy to contact your business. If you're interested in learning more, go to leadferno.com and check out our 14-day free trial. Another thing that you've already mentioned here and put out there, and I think is worth repeating and also attaching what I read in one of the studies, is the small business website is still largely important. Organic results are still largely important. As you guys framed it, you know, having an organic visibility in the top five results gives you a really great shot of acquiring that client. And I think that often gets lost on people because there's so much emphasis on the map pack and Google business profiles and reviews and all of those elements that people forget that it's the combination of those things, especially when they see a result both in organic and the map pack, and you're building, you know, that redundancy with it. They'll end up going likely to the website just as much as they're going through the map pack.
Right. I may have some personal responsibility in the misunderstanding by using the mnemonic of Google is your homepage. I never meant that it was to replace your website. I meant it was just more visually seen more often than your homepage. That's all. Absolutely. I mean, and they're looking for specific things. Like in the restaurants, they wanted a menu. And just, you know, obviously they looked at the photos, made sure it was decent, could fit their size crowd, but they wanted a menu, right? Whereas in physicians, they wanted to see what the physician would look like. And then they wanted to see, are they taking new clients and what insurances they take, right? So they were very, and then how easy it is to make an appointment. So you're absolutely right, but it varies very much by vertical. You know, like in storage, one of the things that impressed people when they got to the website were these little animations that showed how many boxes fit in to a given 6x8 space that's maybe 8 feet high, right? And you'd see these animations and people would say, oh yeah, that's how much I need. So in that situation, one way to distinguish yourself, assuming your price and location competitive, would be, again, with the website, with good communication on the website that clearly articulates what you're offering.
Yeah. No, extremely valuable point there. So we've already mentioned reviews a little bit. You and I spent 5-6 years together at GatherUp, you as a co-founder, me coming on in sales and marketing and ultimately CEO. And we did a ton of research, knee deep in it all the time. I've been removed now for, you know, 3+ years in running LeadFerno. What are some of the evolutions or what are some of the things that these case studies brought to light regarding reviews and conversions that have kind of shifted in the last few years for how consumers see reviews and what they expect and what they trust?
Right. So attitudinal studies show 85% of, like from Bright Local, some good studies show 85% of people express that reviews are important to them. Our behavioral study, we tracked how many people commented that reviews were important. And it was close. It was 65%. Some people just weren't very verbal and didn't say what they were thinking, even though they were looking at reviews. But when people say they're looking at reviews, one is they expect reviews to be in the 4.6 to 4.9 range these days. It used to be, you know, when we started GatherUp, and when I think you wrote that very nice article, research was 4.2 to 4.5 was now, people won't reject you if you have other values they're looking for, but when reviews are the primary consideration, it was higher than it used to be. So that was issue one. Issue two that we saw was that people use ratings and stars as a proxy for reputation. And they very, even though, say, 85% of the people think reviews are important, maybe 100% notice them, only 1 in 5 people actually read reviews. So the people who actually dig into a review and read it are much less than I would have thought. I would have thought more people did. And when they do, the most like my behavior is to look at the negatives to see whether I can live with them. So I projected that out to everybody. But the reality, most people, that there are three things people look for, but the most common was recency. They would order, they'd go into Google, they'd order by most recent, and they'd say, oh, good. They didn't want to be stuck with a company that used to be great that no longer generated reviews. So recency was very important. Negative outcomes was less important, but still looked at. And people who saw owner responses overtly said, oh, that's nice. They're paying attention. That's a good thing. So I don't think our advice, getting a regular, steady, Freddy flow of reviews was something we've always said. It's clearly important, but it only impacts 20% of the people. What would happen is somebody would pick and choose based on star ratings, let's say physicians or restaurants. This is where I saw it was restaurants. You know, they would look for a higher star rating. But then instead of reading the reviews, what they would do would be they would go to a brand search and they'd gut check Google reviews against Yelp or TripAdvisor, whatever the display was. Again, as a proxy, they wouldn't ever go in and read the reviews. They would just see if there was general consistency as to quality. So people don't read them that often. So I think the business takeaway there is, you know, it's never good to have a really bad review, but likelihood of people reading it, it's less than we thought. Recency is really important. I think owner responses, even though, again, only one in five read them, have an impact if you can pull it off. And it's more about star ratings than it is about the reviews.
Yeah. Whatever makes it simple for us to have something pass the eye test, or it's already kind of passed some tests with you and you all almost use that as a last, like, okay, let's just make sure they don't have a bad reputation. Like, they've answered my questions. These other things check the box. Now, as long as they're not, you know, something that starts with a three, I will take a next step or convert. Right.
And we saw that consistently in storage, where price and proximity were most important. Reviews were used to count out people from the collection. Whereas in physicians, people wanted to deal with the best, so reviews were a primary consideration. In lawyers, they wanted gravitas, and, you know, this is a life impact decision. So reviews were important, but not as important as years in business or, you know, the quality image they projected from their website. Important, probably second most important, but it's just sort of interesting how the reviews shifted based on where in this matrix people positioned that search and their need.
Yeah. All right. One quick hitting question for you. Are you still bullish on first party reviews?
Absolutely. I mean, I still work with clients regularly, even though Near Media is working mostly with large multi-location clients. I've kept a small stable of clients that I consult with regularly. I just don't want to lose touch with it. You know, it's like really important to me. And I've become more of a chief marketing officer for them than a SEO. I mean, I look at their SEO, I get them an SEO and I analyze what the SEO is doing, help them translate the reports so they understand what the stupid report said. But what I see is that first party reviews are particularly critical because two things. One, it captures what's going wrong with the company better than any other place, right? Consumers are hesitant to leave a negative review at Google. It's sort of a last resort for them. If you give them an opportunity, they will give you an honest negative review so you can see what's going wrong. And we also find, though, that the majority of those people that leave negative first-party reviews don't go on to leave reviews. And so even though you're asking everybody to leave a review under the new, you know, FTC and Google guidelines, the fact that they were able to complain ends up its own filter. And so first party plays both a big informational role, so you can see where you're still screwing up, and a filtering role, even though it's not actively gating, it psychologically gates people. They got the complaint off their chest. They don't have to go on and leave a review. They were able to communicate to you that you failed. So I see it as important on two very big points.
Yeah. And as we always saw with GatherUp, right, our data across millions of reviews, first party, third party, showed consumers would give first party reviews in quantities of 4 to 10x, right? So not just double, not just triple, but sometimes as much as 10x the amount of direct criticism, feedback, praise, whatever that might be, private to the business, one-to-one to the business instead of Google. And obviously we've always understood why people gravitate towards that. It's the positioning, it's the third-party validation, its effect on, you know, search results and conversion and things like that. But you can't ignore the sheer, you know, benefits of the things that you talked about, the volume that you can bring in. And lastly,
just one other point on that too, is that in multi-location businesses, Google is still showing local review schema, right? So for the all states of the world or the pods of the world, they still show local review schema. So if you have a multi-location business, by all means, first party reviews have double value there. They show in the knowledge graph, they show in the organic results, and they also show in Europe. So the only place it doesn't show is when you're a very small business. Okay, you're not getting that double benefit. You know what?
And you've already cited that can totally be a click magnet, a massive, you know, conversion, a benefit in the service.
Right.
So, where I wanted to kind of summarize everything that we've talked about today and where this hits for me, and I have to thank Andy Crestodina, really furthered some thoughts I already had in a couple conversations I've had with him on earlier conversion casts, is those first party reviews, third party reviews, using them to back up your marketing claims on those pages, right? Instead of having just one page, we've seen so many small businesses move and they have a page that's called reviews or testimonials, and they put everything there. And that's fine, but it's often a very low trafficked page. It's only being used in certain circumstances where the user seeks that. What you're better off doing is being able to splice those and use specific reviews that reinforce the marketing claims that you're making for your specific service, how well you're located, how clean your facility is, you know, the awards you've won, anything like that. And so you're much better off grabbing 2, 3, 4, 5 reviews that are specific to the content landing pages you have for services, locations, whatever that might be, and getting those there. Your research reinforces, if you have a page that has 300 reviews, they're not likely reading all of those or going through them. You're better off just to take a handful of the best ones that reinforce your marketing content on those pages and push those to those areas. And to wrap it up to your highest level, if you understand what people really care about and are what are most important in their decisions, you're placing reviews on those types of pages because it's the most important thing. And now you're adding social proof to what's important to them to convert.
And we did see that, particularly in physicians, when they came to a site that, let's say, had 10 physicians listed across, they would look to see if they were in that tribe. But then they would also look if the stars and ratings were below the images, they would mention that influenced their decision. So absolutely, on your website, it has an impact both globally with the stars, but then specifically with the reviews. I mean, we've seen that in our research. So agree 100%. So when is LeapFerno going to be adding that feature?
Well, we already have review display, right? We display the rating and number of reviews on each page.
I know, but that's not the depth that you just described.
I know. Hey, only so much time to build all the ideas, Mike. I would love to get there. We do have some great things coming, though, that will continue to help with conversion.
All right.
Mike, in closing, I already mentioned to start the show, but I will mention again, if you go to nearmedia.co, you can sign up for your guys' newsletter. Look for the Near Media podcast on whatever podcast that you listen to. But socially, what are the channels you're most active on where people can get these tidbits and know when you release new information?
So I'm still on X Twitter, just inertia and not having found a replacement, and LinkedIn. Near Media has a presence on both as well.
Okay. I will link to those in the show notes, everyone. Again, I can't, I'm biased. I've been a friend of Mike's for 10 years. I always, always learn something, but I can't stress enough just how helpful it is to have the point of view and all the great research that we've talked about today from Near Media. Mike, thank you so much for joining me.
And thank you very much for having me.
You bet.